what other wild creature comes to speak with you. Introduction. Great Blue Heron. I was very young when I woke before dawn and grabbed the small knapsack beside the bed. In it, I placed a spiral notepad, a sharpened pencil, a paper bag containing breakfast, and a heavy thrift store tape recorder with grossly oversized buttons. I walked outside, through the neighborhood, and at the edge of a field full of red-winged blackbirds, I took out the tape recorder. Their officious prattle lifted like shouts from the stock market floor. I pushed record and listened. In time, I moved on, recording birds in different trees, in other lots. I ate cold toast with careful bites, writing things down, the time, the place, what the bird looked like. My penmanship was terrible, shaky, typical for elementary school. I wanted so badly to be able to write like an adult. Occasionally, I would just make loops with the pencil so that it looked like cursive. I worked at the entries, putting the last letter or two of a word on the next line if it wouldn't fit. It was important as anything, and I acted as if I knew what I was doing, as if I knew something about birds, which I did not. I understood only that they flew and that they did it well. I would hold the pencil in my teeth and hum thoughtfully, as I had seen the adults do. With my tape recorder, I walked these fields fanning below the east side of the Rocky Mountains in Colorado. So rarely was I awake at this time of day that it felt like my birthday or Thanksgiving. I had not known that the sunrise was so lavish and that you could actually feel the color when it reached your face. I had a fantasy of running away to the woods, becoming a nomad and a hermit. But soon enough, the 60 minutes of tape ran out. I returned home. There, I ate breakfast a second time. Not for decades would I hear of John James Audubon or Aldo Leopold or Anne Zwinger. In these decades, I would grope into the land. I would be blatantly watched by grizzly bears and hummingbirds. I would blow dust from tracks and crawl on my stomach through forests to see the animals. My truck would be buried, axle deep, in the sand pits of New Mexican backroads. I would become a river guide in the North American deserts and take young students from cities into the wilderness, teaching them how to smell for coyotes and how to let tarantulas walk over their hands. I would rope into canyons looking for all the fear and quiescence and exquisite forms that roil in the wilderness. Now I go out walking, sometimes for 100 miles, circling mountain ranges, or following canyons for weeks and months. More often, it is a quarter mile in an afternoon, shuffling around the trees, looking for a soft place to sit. Out of habit, my eyes train on shapes and movements, and if I see any animal, it is invariably unexpected. I have no idea how proficient trackers do it, choosing their animal, then finding it. I choose a coyote, and I get a very rainy day. I choose an elk, and I get a deer mouse. Then a mountain lion comes from behind while I am crouched looking at its tracks. To see the animal, you must first remain very still. You may have to huddle in the dark of a street culvert for 3 nights before the raccoon comes. You may have to sit naked on the tundra before the grizzly finds you. Or you will simply have to be there, driving the highway the moment that a caravan of unhurried, red-backed salamanders passes from one side to the other. That is when you must leave your car and get on hands and knees in the roadway. Just be careful not to touch the salamanders, because the acid from your fingerprints will burn into their backs. When you encounter an animal, it may be as startling and quick as the buzz of a rattlesnake, or you might have time to note the shift of wind and the daily motions of light. Times that I have seen the animals have been like knife cuts in fabric. Through these stabs, I could see a second world. There were stories of evolution and hunger and death, cross-sections of genetic histories and predator-prey relationships, of lives as cryptic as blood paths in snow. I have talked with those at the Division of Wildlife who know. I have rummaged through clutters of skulls and skeletons in a musty museum basement and read the reports of field biologists, but it is outside where the grip of the story lies. It was at a guidehouse near the Colorado River in Arizona that I saw the great blue heron. We were cleaning gear at the end of a river running trip. Open ice chests and tired people. Equipment was being moved with dry, cracked hands that blew.